this episode of The Interface, I speak with Kevin Truman, Business Development Manager for Amphenol Nexus Technologies in Stamford, Connecticut. Kevin has been with Nexus for a year and a half, and we talk about Nexus's business supplying ruggedized audio and soldier-worn connectors to the military and aerospace industries. We talk about Nexus's origins, building telephone plugs and jacks and push-button switches to today's micro-miniature harsh environment connectors. We talk about the ups and downs of his career in pharmaceutical sales before moving to Amphenol, and how the goal of helping people, regardless of industry, was always his focus. We talk about how spending much of his free time in the outdoors, whether it be fishing, hunting, or searching for artifacts, is his form of therapy. And we discuss his Desert Island album, book, and movie. This is The Interface. We'll try to make this relatively pain-free.
Good.
Okay. Good. Well, Kevin, listen, thank you for coming in here, joining me on The Interface podcast today. So Kevin Truman, who is the business development manager for Amphenol Nexus Technologies. So for people who don't know, because we haven't had anyone on from Nexus in actually a few years, but can you tell me and tell everyone else what Amphenol Nexus Technologies is all about?
So first of all, thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate it. And let's give a little shout out to Amphenol Nexus out there, everybody, shall we, in Amphenoline world? So let's talk a little bit about Amphenol Nexus. So Amphenol Nexus really, you know, its claim to fame is really in audio connectors. Mm-hmm. You know, really kind of focusing on soldier worn. And, you know, there's a nice little history behind it with this telephone plug that I was first introduced to. As you were aware, if we talked about the TP-101.
Right.
Those type of things and how an ordinary telephone plug back in the day that had a static to it could be improved and develop into really what Nexus's core products are, and that is telephone and microphone type products and connectors and plugs. And then, you know, the expanse that we'd like to do beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. We want to expand, you know, in the soldier-worn military market, and had some need for some smaller circular connectors, which I'm sure we'll discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of the expanse. Is the core business is the core business. But for us to want to grow, we had to come up with some new products and mm-hmm. some new ideas beyond our core products. And that's really kind of what Nexus is about. It's small, it's nimble, it has a great product portfolio in military audio, and we want to expand that and grow that business and maybe one day get as big as AAO, as we sit here.
Yeah, I know. That would be a great competition if we actually got there. A little bit different sizes and scales, but that would be, if that happened, that would be equally great for Nexus and not that great for Amphenol Aerospace. But we digress. But Amphenol Nexus Technologies, and I know a little bit about
it
as well, having worked there for a few years. As you started to allude to, you know, developing these really high quality ruggedized telephone plugs and jacks that were much better quality than what was out there before. They used a particular contact design that allowed it to be extremely reliable in the field.
Yeah,
and then they built upon that product portfolio over the years to get to where they are now, and you know, ruggedized military communication connectors and stuff like that. But you started talking about some of the new products that you're working on. Yeah. Talk a little bit about one or two of those that I know you're most excited about.
Yeah, so you know, a couple that we have focused on since I've joined Nexus was, I think, the biggest one everybody's hearing about lately, which is Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, in a simplistic form, Chris, it is a small circular micro connector, mm-hmm. right? And who doesn't need those in designs?
Right.
Especially when we start to look at design paradigms anymore in the military, it's more about power and more data in a smaller space.
Right.
So therefore, you got to have something smaller. Now, what's pretty wild about these Ranger connectors that we're developing is we only have two sizes currently, and that's size 0 and size 1. And you're talking 11.9 millimeters on a size 0,
yeah,
and 13.9 millimeters on a size 1, which is smaller than a U.S. dime in mm-hmm. diameter. So these things are small.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to fit a need, right? Because the need is, when you especially look at the soldier worn market, it's these soldiers are wearing more and more. And so you want to reduce weight and you want to reduce size, but you want to give them everything possibly that they can have just for intel purposes, for safety purposes. And that's where we feel that Ranger is going to fit, right? Because Ranger kind of sits, you know, in amongst like the Terrapin or the 2M. So it kind of sits in the middle. It has a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so for design-ins, at the end of the day, you know, we want to have this big Amphenol portfolio,
mm-hmm.
right? Which our salespeople can choose from and say, hey, you know, we have a design that's looking for a small circular connector, and we don't just have one to pick from.
Right.
We have multiple. And that's where Ranger's going to come in. It's going to kind of fit that niche.
You bring up a good point in that Nexus is part of the commercial air group,
yes.
but really in a broader sense, it's part of the military and aerospace yeah. group of businesses throughout Amphenol. How much do you, and I know you've been, and we'll get to it in a little bit too, you've been with Nexus for about a year and a half or so
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
How much do you interact with the other businesses, and how much has that helped you, you know, working with your Amphenol brothers and sisters for a lot of these opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, it's been good, especially when you think about really trying to develop an overall solution,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, we discussed at the sales meeting, right? In my particular group, it was all about signal and following the signal and, mm-hmm. and how we can work with Borish on a solution and be not only part of the box build, but maybe get some of the cable assembly, mm-hmm. you know, along with it or work with PCD on the audio connector end of things, because we both have the mil-spec standard M55116, and we
right.
partner a lot with that. So it's been great, and I think that's really where the Amphenol model really comes together quite nicely, and that is, you know, at the end of the day, we can go to our customers, and maybe I only have a connector and a cable assembly I can offer, but if they need more, then I have the ability to go out and reach out to the salespeople or the different divisions and really find an overall solution. And that's kind of the exciting thing about how large Amphenol is becoming.
Right.
We really have a lot of options.
Yeah, and the best part is that you can all attach yourselves to the Amphenol name.
Yeah,
which absolutely. In the industry, especially when it comes to the military and aerospace, is about as good as you can get from an interconnect solution standpoint.
Yeah.
You came from a very radically different industry, though. I guess it's probably, you know, good to transition to that. You know, as we said, you've been here for about a year and a half now, but you came from a long career, probably close to 20 years, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
in pharmaceutical sales.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I did. Very, very, very different business.
Yeah.
And look, pharmaceuticals was a good business.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good business. So any opportunity or any job, and this job is no different, where you have the ability to go out and help somebody do something better.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of that business, it was about helping somebody's health be better. So there were a lot of days it was very rewarding. But, you know, it's a tough business.
Yeah.
It's not a business for the faint of heart, and you kind of have to go into that business knowing what you are. You know, I had a regional director in pharmaceuticals that gave me some good advice, and that really sums up what that business is. And one day we sat down and we were having a drink, and we were just kind of talking about the business in general. And he said, you know, Kevin, at the end of the day in this business, it's just like sports. In some instances, we're not on contract and we're all free agents.
Mm.
And that really kind of summed it up, right? Because what he meant by that was, you know, you're good one day, and if a patent expires or there's some type of merger acquisition, you could be gone the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 18 years in that business, I sat through 15 layoff calls.
Whew. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, again, but look, I knew what I was into. And really, at the end of the day, you try to look at the goal of what the job was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was good conversations there where patients were helped to better health, and
yeah.
and that's rewarding. It's no different, like I said, than this business. If you have the ability to help a soldier out, to be able to get information quicker
mm-hmm.
and better, you know, you could very well save that soldier's life.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how you have to look at it. So, you know, tough business, yes, but I learned a lot from that business, and I'm trying to apply some of it here.
Yeah, very different in the approaches, I'm sure. But yeah. I like the way that you put that, as far as really at the end of the day, in your mind, in order to, just from the basic core level of who Kevin Truman is and what you want to do, to feel like you have value in the job that
you do. So true.
You know, with pharmaceutical sales, like you said, it's literally helping people's health.
Yes.
And in this, in the same sort of way, you know, you could potentially be helping save lives as well. And I think that's a good way to look at it. And sometimes, you know, we get so caught up in the day-to-day and numbers and forecasting and, you know, we got to go visit these customers and I hope that they don't yell at us too much for deliveries and things like that.
Right.
And make sure our quality is good. And then you step back and you go, what are we really doing this for?
Right.
This is what we're doing this for.
Right.
And I think it then grounds you, it centers you, it gives you an anchor to keep. You know, Adam talks often about that North Star, right? And that would be your North Star in a sense.
Yeah, and it is, you know, that North Star is, I like that terminology, and you got to have a focus, and, you know, every job that I think everybody has, you take a little bit away from it,
mm-hmm.
but at the end of the day, the overall goal is the same, and, you know, there's a benefit that you provide, and you just got to know that benefit, you know, and I have conversations with the salespeople a lot, too. I tend to, you know, be a little long-winded and try to tell a story to salespeople. But the story, the whole thing about the story is what's the end result here?
Mm-hmm.
And to paint a picture of why are you doing what you're doing? And this is the reason why. You know, I think it gets the point across, and I've been told it gets the point across well. And like I said, every job has its value, and the end result is doing what's right for the customer, whether it's a patient in medical or whether it's a soldier in the military.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. You know, and I know that, you know, having seen you at our recent sales meeting last month and knowing how important that story is to you, even with the video you made for a presentation, you could tell that was done with a lot of thought and intent in it to make it connect with people, you know, for lack of a better term. And I think that's what you're getting at, where it has to mean something to you.
Honestly, to look at that, I mean, I had to learn, and I thought, what better way to learn than to do a little research? And I had some great help from Marcom,
right?
And you know, I put a script together, which helped me understand it better. And to your point, you know, I had a lot of sales folks come up to me afterwards and say, "Hey, look, that set the stage, and it imprinted what Signal should be about." And I learned a little bit from it. And that's what it was all about. But honestly, it all started because I truly wanted to learn about it. I needed to know about what Signal was. And I was so excited after I learned about it. I was like, you know what? I want to tell this story to people.
Right.
And throw in some funny little video clips to get people laughing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you gotta
I've learned from the best.
Yeah, you got to keep people's attention.
Yeah, you do.
Absolutely. What's the biggest difference for you, because I know they're very, very different, like the industry you came from and now working for in this industry in military and aerospace, but specifically for how Amphenol works as a corporation? To you, what's the biggest difference between those two?
Yeah, well, you know, and I've talked to a lot of people about this, and it's the culture. And I know that sounds crazy, and I came from an industry where every company that I worked for talked about how its culture was so great, and the reality was it was terrible. There was no culture. There was no employee value. It was very matter of fact. And look, as long as you adjusted for that, you got through it, and you knew what your job was, and you took care of it. But you know, so it was a big transition when I came to Amphenol, because everybody talked about this Amphenolian culture and this. And at first I was like, oh, give me a break. This is no way realistic. But you know, you and I've had a lot of conversations.
Yeah.
And the longer that I've been here, people truly care about each other here. And that is as sincere as I can be.
Yeah.
And I know that even in my job, if I make a mistake, it's okay. You know, I learn from it. I move forward and I have support of everybody that's around me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't make a mistake and I have success, I have everybody around me.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is a true definition of a family value,
mm-hmm.
I have witnessed it here. And it does mean something. And as an older man, you know, I think that's important because, Chris, you want to know at the end of the day that you're doing something that means something not only to yourself, but that other people around it care for you and what you're doing, and they want to help guide you.
Yeah.
And that means a lot. So definitely the culture.
Very well put. It's a good place to transition to, in that you are from Sydney. You know, basically raised in Sydney, New York. Certainly familiar with the specter of Amphenol Aerospace on Delaware Avenue for many, many years growing up through high school and college and all that. And you are, I mean, there's no other way to put it, basically a legacy. I mean, you have had multiple family members who have worked for Amphenol, including your father, your stepfather, your stepbrother, your brother-in-law. We can go on and on and on.
Yes, we are a family, aren't we?
yeah. But can you just talk a little bit about, as you were younger, your younger days, back then, what did you think of all of this? You know, what did it mean to you and your relationship to the company and Sydney?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, as a younger me, I probably didn't think quite like that. I looked at Amphenol as this big corporation in town that, you know, employed a lot of my family.
Yeah.
As an older person, I looked at it and say, this organization is truly what provided for me in my childhood and my early adulthood, you know, because your parents take care of you, right? And there has to be a means to that end, which Amphenol was for my father and my stepfather and stepbrother and you and my brother-in-law. I also looked at really the legacy of what Amphenol was. I mean, I remember back when I was very, very young, when it was Bendix, and they'd have like open house days, and you know, you'd go down by like the guard shack and that whole green lawn area. It would be filled with employees and their families sitting down. I have those memories still, you know, and or Scintilla back when it was that. You know, it's definitely made this town.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. So to see, you know, this new factory and the technology still remain here, you know, means a lot for the community. And I, even though you and I don't live in this community anymore, but we both had some time growing up here. We both didn't start our growing up here, but we both kind of ended up here. It means a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it has certainly changed over the years, even since I've been in this area as long as you have. But, you know, in the amount of time I've been here, how much it's changed and the importance to what this place is to the town still remains, even though it might not be as many employees as, say, the almost 9,000 during the, you know, height of World War II when they were making, you know, thousands of aircraft magnetos per month. That was long gone, but I mean, and in the, you know, places have, there's been mergers and acquisitions, and they've broken off some of the business and moved it down to Jacksonville. There's so much we can get into. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know, we'll probably learn more about that next year as the 100th anniversary comes up, but it's had such an imprint on everything in this town and everyone that grew up here. I mean, it was just, everyone knew it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with a town that's not that big like Sydney is, I mean, it dominated everything. Everyone had either a family member or a neighbor or a friend who worked at the plant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's how these communities develop, right?
Yeah.
I mean, from these industries that are around it. So, you know, you really think about the legacy of this industry when, you know, I mean, hey, in the news, I mean, look at Remington up in Ilion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting closed and sent down south. I mean, that made that town for years and years and years. And now you have a community sitting there wondering, hey, you know, you got 300 jobs that are going to leave it. What are we going to do with this? So very thankful that Amphenol put its roots here in Sydney and said, you know what? We're here for the long haul and we're staying.
It's a great story. I could say a lot more, but I'm not going to. I'm going to save it okay. for other projects coming up shortly. It's a little foreshadowing there. But anyway, now I digress. I'm the one specifically digressing. Let's shift away here for just a second, right? And get away from, work and Amphenol and all that stuff.
Okay.
I know that, I don't necessarily have to ask you what you like to do in your free time because I'm well aware of what you like to do in your free time.
Yeah.
You are, you to me are always the example I go to when you talk about someone who's an outdoorsman. You are the outdoorsman I always have in my head. Just tell me a little bit about what that was like for you growing up and how much it still means to you in your free time, in finding your happy place.
Yeah, I think, just take a look around. This is a rural community.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you look at our age, when we were younger, at least for me growing up around this rural area, I mean, we didn't have the technology back then. You entertained yourself by being in the outdoors. And look, my father is an outdoorsman. I mean, a lot of my family are. So, especially on the fishing end of things, look, it's therapy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It always has been.
Why is that?
I think everybody has their own way to deal with daily life and, when there's issues and things like that. And I just find it therapeutic. I mean, look, I want to catch something. I'm not going to lie to you. Okay. But even on days that I don't, I'm fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my whole, the native culture obsession with all the walking that I do and enjoyment. And, I don't have to find anything. It's just about being outside, taking a walk. And you're there with your thoughts. I know it kind of sounds like I'm getting deep here, but, it truly is therapy. You have a lot of different experiences of certain wildlife you see and things like that. And, it's just part of my upbringing. I just enjoy being out in as much as I can when I can,
How often are you out there and you have a revelation in your mind where you think of something like, oh, there it is. For me, it happens. I'm in the shower washing my non-existent hair.
Yeah.
For you, it could be, I know you're big into finding arrowheads out in fields.
Yeah.
And so you walk for miles and miles and miles. I mean, how often are you out there or out on the boat or something fishing where all of a sudden you're in a relaxed state mentally and all of a sudden something goes bing and he's like, oh, there it is. There's the answer.
I wouldn't say all the time. I would say if we were going to quantify it, there might be a couple of times in a year, and it may not be so much as an aha moment,
mm-hmm.
but it might be mental preparation.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like there was a thought process, right? When I was in a pharmaceutical industry and I thought, man, I got to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of that thought that went in during those walks or those long boat rides and thought processes about, Amphenol could be a good option.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's not a lot I know about that industry other than what I learned when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But it could be a good future for me. I mean, that was one of the biggest revelations that I had in a lot of that time when I was out and about and walking around. But I'd say a couple times a year I have an aha moment. I mean, look, I think everybody wants to have that crazy invention that's worth $1 billion pop into their head where they can just say, hey, I'm going to dictate my own life and rule my own kingdom here. But I haven't quite had that yet. But
Yeah, me neither. Mine usually ends up being things like, connecting the dots in a story for the beginning of our sales meeting right. films,
Yeah, but
I know how I'm going to do it.
And they're great. You do a great job with
thanks.
It.
Yeah, but that's usually what they are. But still, I think the point being, to kind of go back to that, is yes, you enjoy being outside.
Yeah.
You enjoy the fishing and the hunting and the finding of artifacts when you're out there.
Yeah.
But as much as doing all that, like you said, even if you don't, accomplish, put something on the scoreboard that
right.
day, you get yourself in a good mental state. It calms the rest of the noise down. You're able to kind of think about it with a clear mind and process it. It's your form of meditation.
Well, yeah. I mean, and think about it. Today's world, has a lot more noise in it than it did when we were younger, right?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, you know, people just have to have their own way to cope with it. And I do. And in fact, like last night, man, I mean, it was 11 o'clock at night. I was out fishing.
Really?
Yep. In a cold 10 degree night. And, but it was calming to me.
Yeah.
It was very calming to me. And I needed that. You know what I mean? I need to get out. One, because it's wintertime and I want to get out and get some exercise. And I'm sure I have a little bit of ADHD, as my wife always likes to tell me. But I just needed to get out last night in that open air and think. You know what I mean? And that's my time. There's no one else around me. It's kind of bizarre. It's like being in this world that, you know.
Yeah.
And nobody else is in. Because at 11 at night. Yeah. Who the hell's out at 11 at night?
But in wintertime, it's almost like you might as well be on the moon.
Yeah. But I caught some great walleyes and had a great time. And next thing you know, I mean, I look at my watch and I'm like, yeah, I probably should be getting home.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So time goes by.
All right. So let me wrap up with this then, okay? And I did not prep you for this, but I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
All right. I take you away from all this, from Nexus, from... Maybe not so much from the outdoors activities, but I put you by yourself on a desert island for like, say, 6 to 12 months. Okay? You're by yourself. I say, Kevin, you can only bring with you three things.
Oh, my gosh.
One album, one book, and one movie. All right? So we'll start with an album. What album would Kevin Truman bring with him?
Well, album-wise, because I'm a product of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say Motley Crue, Too Fast for Love.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what you were going to go with. My odds on bet was going to be Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses.
That's a good one, but you know, you got to go to that garage band sound when things first started. You know what I mean?
Okay. Motley Crue, yes.
Yes.
Okay. How about a book? What book would you bring with you?
Oh, my gosh. You're talking to somebody who's
usually
not
on
so
a
much,
boat,
yeah,
fishing and
right.
not reading.
So my mentality—it's terrible, right? Because I think some of the most intellectual people in the world are people that really put time into reading books, and I've always had to make excuses for that because I'm not a big reader.
Yeah,
my mentality is I'm the guy you're reading about.
Okay,
because I'm out doing it.
Okay, I like that though.
But if I mean, to pull a book. I mean, I don't know. So we read this book a little while ago. It was actually, believe it or not, it was like this children's book, and it was called Jangles, but it had a great story to it.
I know, it's so funny, right?
Well, Jangles was this large fish that the reason he was called Jangles is because he had so many hooks and lures in his mouth
that
nobody could hold him, you know what I mean? It was about this young kid's quest to catch him. You know, his father was very involved in it and had many experiences with Jangles or whatnot. And long story short, the kid ends up catching him. But when he catches him, there's no like lures or hooks or anything in the mouth. And I think the long and the short of it was that the father had caught him and removed everything and never said anything to the son. But the son had such this goal that he wanted to catch this this fish that you know, he kind of supported that goal as any father would do.
Okay,
and so. You know, it was just a good little story, but I think it's a story of inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, it's a story about a goal. It's a story about, you know, catching this great fish and releasing this great fish.
Yeah.
It has a bizarre twist. Like the fish comes out of the water and talks to him and wants to invite him down to his little underwater house and all that kind of stuff. But it's a good little story. So I would say something simple like that.
Okay. No, it's a good one. I don't know that one.
Can't say I'm like a Catcher in the Rye type of guy.
Well, I didn't know if you're gonna go like Old Man in the Sea by Hemingway or something.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was a bad book, and that definitely had a goal too.
Yeah.
And an end thought to it. But no, so books are tough with me. So that's the reach that I can give you.
Okay, that's fine. And then finally, how about a movie?
Oh, I think movies that can bring you back to your childhood are pretty important. So I think one that stands out in my childhood is Stand By Me.
Okay.
Right?
Good one, yeah.
And I know we've shared watching that on our New Year's movie night sometimes that we have every year together. And but you know, it was like a time of my life when it was like, again, you know, when we were kids, there wasn't a lot of technology. I mean, what did you do? You got together with your buddies and you went somewhere and camped. I mean, it's not like we found a dead body, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was about these adventures that you
and
went
bonds
on.
Bonds that were formed.
Yeah. You know, when I watched that, it definitely kind of brings me back to my childhood. I know I gave you a couple of examples of music and a movie from the 80s, but and that's where we're influenced the most.
That's exactly right. You know, the ages of between like 16 and 23, I think, are the most impressionable ages when it comes to developing your taste for these things. So
yeah,
I totally get it. Well, so anyway, listen, Kevin, thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate you coming
in. Oh, man, I appreciate you giving me the time.
I've been looking forward to this for a while, and I'm glad we finally were able to do it. Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. Have a good one.